Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest installment of H2 Tech Talk. Today, we are joined by Damien Beauchamp, President and Chief Development Officer for 8 Rivers. How are you doing today, Damien?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Oh, anytime. How is Sarah Week treating you so far?
Busy as usual. A lot of meetings, speaking engagements, and networking going on, but all very positive.
Excellent. Excellent. So how about we get started with you telling our listeners a little bit about 8 Rivers and your role with the company?
Yeah, absolutely. So 8 Rivers was founded in 2008 with the mission of delivering clean energy by leveraging the existing energy system that we have in place today around hydrocarbons and how to clean those up. And the core premise around our whole technology suite is to utilize hydrocarbons with pure oxygen and then capture the CO2 as a gas instead of using adsorbents. So it's all focused around carbon capture, how you do that, how you drive efficiency of the systems higher to get better economics with the carbon capture, and focusing on direct air capture as well. So not just industrial processes, but also how do you remove historic emissions from the atmosphere. My role at 8 Rivers is primarily focused on origination, looking for investment into the company projects and technologies, as well as looking for strategic partners to join us on projects and developing paths for revenue for the company long term.
Got it. So you mentioned carbon capture. You said it's a large part of your business. I read that you have a carbon capture rate of over 99%. How is that possible?
Yeah, so the 8er H2 system is designed such that CO2 never leaves the system. And we, in fact, produce CO2 in the reformation process of natural gas using oxygen. And then CO2 is a heat transfer fluid within the 8er H2 system. And so because CO2 is inherently being captured as a gas in the system, it never actually leaves unless we want it to leave. And so we're able to achieve very high efficiencies as opposed to other systems which will produce CO2 in a dilute form as a exhaust gas. And then they have to physically capture that CO2 on adsorbent, so say an amine or other solid sorbents, to remove the CO2 from that exhaust gas. But because our exhaust gas functionally is pure CO2, we are able to achieve very high capture rates at much lower cost.
So you said the CO2 never escapes unless you want it to.
That's right.
Is there a scenario where that would make sense?
Yeah, so we do want the CO2 to ultimately leave the system. So for every incremental amount of combustion that we do on the front end to generate heat for the reforming process, we need to take out some CO2. Think about like filling a balloon, right? If we don't take out some of the gas at some point, the balloon, in this case the pipes, would burst. And so we need to make sure that we're taking out some CO2, but when we take out that CO2, it goes into a CO2 pipeline. And those CO2 pipelines then take it to sequestration. So stores the CO2 deep underground in depleted oil and gas reservoirs or in saline aquifers that are naturally formed deep within the earth under, you know, significant layers of cap rock. And then it's permanently and safely stored.
All right. Fair enough. So can you tell us a little bit more about the 8er H2 technology?
Yeah, so the 8er H2 technology starts with oxycombustion of natural gas. So we're burning natural gas with pure oxygen as well as a recycling loop of CO2. There's also some tail gas that comes in from the reformation process, but we'll start with the oxycombustor. So you have fuel, CO2, oxygen. You then produce a stream of hot CO2 coming out of that. That goes into a reformer. Into the reformer, you're feeding natural gas and steam. That is then turning into hydrogen. There's some downstream processing of that gas through an oxygen secondary reformer, water gas shift, and pressure swing adsorber. The pressure swing adsorber gives you the pure hydrogen. And any tail gas that's left actually goes back into our combustor. So we're not wasting any of the feedstock that we're putting into this system. We're leveraging all of it. So we get a higher energy efficiency from that, if you will. And then out of the reformer through a separate pipe is CO2. So hot CO2 coming through the combustor goes into what's called the CO2 convective reformer. Out of the top of the CO2 convective reformer is coming hot CO2. which then gets recycled through a series of heat exchangers and then goes back into the combustor. Additionally, in that top CO2 loop, we're taking off a slipstream of CO2, putting it into a pipeline, and taking that to sequestration. So that's generally the way that the 8RH2 process works.
Interesting. So how does that relate to the Cormorant Clean Energy Project? I hope I pronounced that word correctly.
Yeah, that was exactly right. So Cormorant is a bird here in Houston, so that's why we named it Cormorant. So if you go down to our site in Port Arthur, you'll see cormorants flying around. But so the Cormorant Project is leveraging the 8RH2 technology as the hydrogen generator for ammonia production. So ammonia, NH3, is a common fertilizer, but it's also being looked at as a zero carbon fuel. So if you think about methane, CH4, remove one of the hydrogens, replace the C with a nitrogen, and you've now got a zero carbon fuel. You sequester the CO2 produced from hydrogen generation. You then take that hydrogen to what's called an ammonia loop. You then produce NH3, and you can export that NH3 just the way that you export LNG. And what we're seeing in the market is that, you know, organizations and regions around the world that don't have access to CO2 sequestration are leveraging what are called zero carbon fuels to replace traditional fossil fuels in their systems to eliminate CO2 emissions.
Interesting. And some of these no carbon fuels, what are some examples?
Ammonia is one of the best zero carbon fuels, we think, because it doesn't have the issues that hydrogen does. So hydrogen is another example. So you could just use pure hydrogen, but hydrogen it likes to escape. It's a very small molecule, so it's hard to contain it. Hmm. It's hard to not have leaks of hydrogen. And so one, you avoid that, but then two, to transport hydrogen, because it is a gas and it's so diffuse, it has very low energy density. So it's you need to increase the energy density of hydrogen to transport it, and you do that by liquefying it. And so ammonia has the advantage that you can get it to liquid with very little energy. So the boiling points are very different between hydrogen and ammonia. So you can get a higher energy density for a lower energy penalty using ammonia over hydrogen, at least during the transport process. But those, I think, are the two lead zero carbon fuels. And then there are, you know, the sustainable aviation fuels, which are leveraging CO2, maybe pulled from direct air capture, which give you a net zero emissions benefit. But we really like this as a fuel feedstock because it doesn't have any carbon once it's being exported.
Gotcha. So what main sectors do you think that 8RH2 has the greatest potential to help decarbonize?
Yeah, one will definitely be the agricultural sector. Mm-hmm. So producing ammonia in a zero emissions way. So we use a lot of ammonia today. It's the second largest or first largest chemical emitter, if you will. Chemical process emissions are number one from ammonia. Number two is ethylene, which then goes into a lot of polymers and materials and is probably within the threads of your suit here. But the other place we see hydrogen and 8RH2 playing a role is in refining. So refineries are the second largest consumer of hydrogen in the world. And so we see a way to eliminate CO2 emissions in refineries by producing the hydrogen in a zero carbon manner, zero emissions manner. And then the other place on the ammonia side is also as an energy carrier. So, you know, if you're using ammonia to co-fire with coal plants and international markets, I like to refer to it as the refueling retrofit. So you basically put new fuel into the system that emits no CO2. So that's, I think, another application, and obviously one we're targeting with the Cormorant project.
So what do you think, as far as ammonia as a carrier, how would you compare that to, say, methanol?
I think that from a carbon perspective, I think that you have more control over the emissions if you're producing ammonia locally and sequestering the CO2. Then when you export those ammonia molecules, there's no way that the counterparty could ever use them in a manner where you actually end up having net CO2 emissions. With methanol, you kind of need to be careful, one, how it was produced. you still have a carbon molecule associated with it, and you're still emitting a CO2 molecule at the end of the day. You know, methanol is interesting, but our preference is to, you know, have a zero carbon fuel option for the world. And that's why we're focused on ammonia.
Where do you hope to see your ARH2 technology in another 5 years?
Yeah, so over the next 5 years, I hope, you know, we see ourselves producing 5 million tons of ammonia per annum. So that would be effectively 5 Cormorants, either, you know, operating or in the process of construction. I think, you know, we can see that over time. And then, you know, providing those fuels for reducing emissions significantly in international markets, I think, is a big opportunity. And then I'd also like to see it being deployed within a refinery setting as well. So that's a second market that we're looking at, where I think there's a lot of opportunity.
So if you're using your technology in a refinery setting, does that make the hydrogen ammonia blue or green? Blue, I guess, technically?
So if you're in a refinery setting, in those settings, we're not going to be producing ammonia. We would just be doing what's called typical hydrogenation. So it's a process to treat hydrocarbons to create a new or different kind of hydrocarbon molecule. So the hydrogens basically attach to the long chain hydrocarbons. And one of the things for us on the color of hydrogen is colors don't really give you any indication of the actual carbon intensity. And so, you know, the color system, although it makes it relatively easy to speak about, like, what's the energy source that's producing the hydrogen, it doesn't really give you an understanding for what the actual carbon intensity is. And that's the ultimate goal. So, like, for example, if you were to put an electrolyzer on the grid today and produce however many molecules of hydrogen you wanted, and then you were to build a gray SMR system to produce hydrogen and it's emitting. Mm-hmm. The math I've done is that the electrolyzer today on the grid to produce an equivalent amount has more CO2 emissions than the gray hydrogen does. And so that's an example of where, you know, calling it green and calling it gray, it doesn't give any real indicator to the overall carbon intensity of the process to produce the hydrogen. So, you know, colors are, I guess, easy ways to refer to the hydrogen. But, you know, we've never been a big fan of the color game. So,
yeah, I mean, that's why I asked, because, you know, I think it sounds a little strange. I'm like, well, how you're describing your process, it sounds closer, like it would be more green than blue or gray. But, yeah, I mean, I guess, like you said, it's just a good identifier to identify the processes and keep it as simple as possible.
Yeah, I think that's right. So it's good from that standpoint.
Yeah. I guess simplicity is always great, especially if you want the masses to pick up and understand and accept something, you know. So, but Damien, before we wrap up, do you have any closing thoughts that you'd like to give the audience?
Yeah, as far as closing thoughts are concerned, I think here at CERAWeek, you know, they have the hydrogen hub here. There's been a lot of focus in a lot of the sessions around hydrogen and how to best leverage its value in the decarbonization conversation. And I think given CERAWeek is a heavily oil and gas focused conference, I think what we've seen are some very practical ways that we can leverage clean and zero emissions hydrogen or low emissions hydrogen to really affect the overall carbon intensity of many industries. Again, those being things like refining as well as ammonia production. And so, you know, I'm looking forward to what we're doing at Eight Rivers with Cormorant and hope to meet you here again next year and give you an update.
Yeah, we can do this every year. We did it last year, next year, third year update. Why not?
Let's do it. 2028 COD. We'll see if we're right.
We'll see. So I thank you a lot for joining us for an episode. Damien Beauchamp, people.
Thank you. Thanks, Tyler. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Good talking to you.
Anytime. And thank you to the listeners for tuning in to another episode.